Broadcasting live from the Walter E. Washington Convention Center in the ASTD International Convention and Expo.
Lee Cantor with Stone Payton at ASTD 2014, Washington, D.C., day three. Stone, how are you hanging in?
I am doing well. We are in full stride of the third and final day of this conference. I got to tell you, I always have fun when we do these remote broadcasts, but I don't think we've ever had this many substantive and engaging conversations, so many of them back-to-back. I have learned so much. I got to be honest, I'm a little bit worn out, but I think I have enough energy to make it through the balance of the third day. And I just know this is going to be an interesting and informative segment. We have with us programs consultant from the American Cancer Society. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Miss Felicia Montgomery. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So now, how did you handle the news of ASTD being ATD? Did that upset you, or you went along with that?
I was noodling on it for a while. I'm all over the place, mixed emotions. But you know what? It makes sense.
So getting the word talent in there, that's kind of important, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, our department at the American Cancer Society is talent development, and we spent a lot of time talking about you know what word and what wording to use. So I see it.
So it made perfect sense to you.
It made sense to me, yeah.
It was probably her idea. To hear her talk about it.
They were stealing from the American Cancer Society.
Yeah. Right. I was going to say that. I don't want to take all the credit, but
the listeners can connect the dots.
That's right.
Yes.
You be the judge.
That's right.
So aside from changes in like that, what other trends have you seen coming down the pike here lately? And what trends, if any, have you seen sort of highlighted or underscored while you've been at the conference?
I'm super excited, and something that I think is a trend in our, not a trend, but a marble moving in our organization is just the value of learners learning from themselves. I mean, I don't want to say social learning,
but self learning
and putting more responsibility and accountability on the learner and giving them the tools to do it.
Right, right. So my partner and I, Celia Shore, we were here presenting on a program that we designed. It was 100% virtual. It was self-directed.
Oh, wow.
And learner-driven. And, you know, the participants chose what they wanted to learn. We provided a framework. We provided options, and they got to choose their own adventure. In the day and age when people can get information from Google in a split second, we have to get off our high horse. You know, as a learning and development professional, they're not only going to learn from me. And so I see myself.
What?
I know. I was upset about that. And I've spent many hours, you know, talking myself okay with that. But really, we have to get off our high horse and see ourselves more. I like to see myself as a designer of learning experiences. I like to put together, you know, puzzles that empower people. They don't need us for information anymore.
But how do you make sure that the companies gets the outcome they desire from the learner?
Well, I mean, I think that's the million-dollar question. And, you know, when we're designing these learning experiences, although we want to put the control and put the learners in the driver's seat, we still have to be conscious about mapping it back to our organizational goals and our learning objectives that we have as an organization. But I think we have to involve our people in it.
Right.
You know, who are we to know exactly where their strengths are and not?
Right.
What they need individually.
I really like this notion of choice, and it makes perfect sense. I mean, I think it has merit in the parenting model. I think for children, you want to provide some choices between the ditches, and you certainly have to align the learner's opportunity with the vision and mission of the organization. But within that, choice about content, choice about medium, choice about platform. I really like that notion. And so you guys have started really doing that and applying that.
Yeah, yeah. So we have a manager development program that we designed, and there's some required core content that all of our participants would take, but then there's just a menu of options.
Uh-huh.
What do you need personally? Where are you at? I don't know what you need right now.
Yeah.
We want things are just in time. Our culture is just in time. So what do you need right now? Is it strategic thinking? Is it a decision-making tool? Is, you know, and it's funny that you talked about kids. I've got a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old. So I've read the occasional parenting blog. I've read fractions of pieces of books here and there. But choices motivate people.
Yeah.
We no longer want the mandated course to sit through, you know. So
now, does any of the learning that you do, does it trickle down to the volunteers, or is this all internally for the American Cancer Society employees?
We have to support our volunteers. They are the ones doing our work and moving our mission. So we actually have a branch in our department focused specifically on volunteer development.
Because that must be a whole challenge unto itself. I mean, it's hard enough to get employees to do things, but people who can come and go as they please, you got to keep them engaged. That must be doubly hard.
Yeah, and an added factor to that is that we've got, within our organization and then even broader in our volunteers, we've got folks all over the spectrum with who's comfortable with this sort of choice approach, who's comfortable
right.
with being learner-driven.
Right.
The tide is turning, but there's still quite a bit of people who are comfortable with, tell me what to do.
Sit down, shut up, give me your milk money,
right.
and I'm
right.
going to show you exactly what to do.
Right, right. right. So in our volunteer world, that's one of the big challenges we're facing now is there's plenty of people comfortable with the traditional e-learning.
Right.
There's plenty of comfortable. There's some people who do not have internet access.
Right. You got to accommodate them, right?
So, and you forget about, or I would have a tendency to just, you get insulated, and those of us that have that kind of access and use it all the time, it's easy to let that go and forget
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, yeah. So I think our challenge is, you know, we want to stay relevant and on this curve and with the latest technology and learning approaches, but there's still people all over the spectrum, and we can't, especially in our organization, one of our largest volunteer groups is the baby boomer, and there's a whole bunch of people there all over the range of what are they comfortable with.
Right. Yeah, so, you can't afford to ignore a big chunk of
no.
your volunteers.
Right, right, no.
So I got to know the backstory. How did you get involved in this line of work? Did you know right out of college this is what I'm going to do? I'm going to go work with a not-for-profit, and I'm going to get involved in training, or was it a little more circuitous than that?
It was... There was a deviation, but in college
it didn't involve time, right?
Right.
Okay.
But no, in after my graduate work, my graduate work had a focus in organizational effectiveness and
uh-huh.
Intercultural communication, and so I worked in healthcare for a little bit, but training and development has been a portion of my job since I got out of college, and then finally I made it. This is what I want to do, so. I do it full term.
So at the conference, have you had a chance to go to some of the education sessions?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Do you have the neuroscience bug? Seems like that
yeah.
was a lot of sold out.
That's where the buzz was. The one that I did try to get into was full, so I couldn't get in, but... Yeah.
So you'll have to wait till next year to learn about neuroscience?
She's not going to wait. No, because she's one of these that chooses herself.
Yes.
She takes it. She says if she takes an interest
yeah.
and or, you know, it's part of her mandate,
yeah.
she's going to go find out about this neuroscience
yeah.
thing.
I'm going to get on the Google.
So any education that you liked that you'll be able to bring back to American Cancer Society?
I mean, we recognize the high point was the radio interview. We
yeah.
understand it. Just set that aside for a moment.
Right.
And let's
right.
talk through some other high points.
In addition to you all... I'm on a big, my next big project is working on our inclusion strategy. So we're in the process of, as an organization, rolling out a multicultural initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Because cancer is in every, and you know, every community affects every person. So, I attended a couple sessions on intercultural communication and working across cultures. So, that was where I spent a lot of my time today.
Any tips on that area that you can share?
What I am interested about that, and I talk to people around here, are what's the skill set involved in working multiculturally?
Mm-hmm.
I think there's one thing to give somebody an awareness. There's one thing to know about the different cultures and their preferences and you know the nuances and the uniqueness of each culture. But bottom line, once we know that, you can use the Google for that, right?
Right.
You can get on Google and figure out what is it about the Hispanic community? What is it? How's the Asian community? You can do that. But what we need to know is, great, now what? You know, so how do we have a conversation with someone from the Asian population who does not like to talk about their health care, their doctor visits?
Mm-hmm.
It's not part of their culture. That's private information. And why are you asking me about my breast exam?
Right.
You know, so the skill set behind intercultural work, that's what I was here really trying to pinpoint and make some idea or get some ideas.
Now, in American Cancer Society, organizational culture and recognizing we have this other dimension of these volunteers that, you know, they don't necessarily report to anybody specifically, I don't guess, and they certainly don't get a paycheck. What is their appetite for embracing training and development opportunities? Are they even hungrier sometimes than some of us in more traditional organizations, or does it have to be kind of marketed and sold to them?
Good question. I think
I thought it was a fantastic. It took me a really long time to get it out.
Well, yeah,
but Felicia, I thought it was a fantastic question.
It was a superior question. But I think it goes back. We have folks all over the gamut. There's some folks, you know, who are looking for it and want to do it because they want a specific role. We have a variety of roles that people can fill. We operate. We have our board and created by volunteers. So I mean,
right.
there's a pipeline and a career opportunity in our volunteer space. So it's all over the gamut. Some folks seek it out. Others we have to say this is required
right.
to participate. So please get this in. I think it's the same challenge we face in the staff world.
Yeah, and I think that in your case, your organization is so large.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you're dealing with so many people. I mean, volunteers and all over the world. It must be just a challenge to always try to serve everybody individually, but doing it in a systematic way.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably always balancing that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And you know, the nature of volunteering, of volunteerism, is changing. So, you know, there's a large segment of our volunteers, the one hits, you know, they want to go
up once and then that's it.
Right.
But you need those two.
We need those two. So how much do we train them? We don't want to steer them away because we have 15 hoops
right.
to go through.
Right. It's too hard. They don't want to get involved.
Right. So those episodic and those one time hits, you know, how do we give them? And we've got, you know, with the generation now, it's, you know, schools and folks, they need to have volunteer hours.
Right.
They need to have that. So folks are there to fill a requirement for their job, for their school, for something. So what roles do we
It sounds like you spend a lot of time trying to figure this out.
Yeah, this is not the first time you've had that conversation.
Right.
Right.
Well, spent a lot of time thinking about this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like I said, we do have now, just recently we have a team dedicated to that because it is such a focus.
Now, are there any events that you're working on right now? Anything that you guys are busy with?
Right now, the American Cancer Society is in our Relay for Life season. It's our biggest income development program. Have you guys heard of Relay for Life?
Oh, yeah. My kids come home with a packet every day. Yes.
Yeah, cool.
Their entire school career. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So right now, just across the nation and globally, folks are in the middle of relay season. And it's our biggest fundraiser. It's the heart. It's the heart of the American Cancer Society.
And there's probably tons of volunteers and events happening all over the country and, fun runs and different races and things happening all over the place, right?
Yeah, yeah. The Relay, the name is sort of confusing, but Relay for Life is it's an evening event, an all-night, overnight
it's
event.
It's an all-nighter,
yeah.
Or at least the version I went to.
Yeah.
And it was so much fun. We had everybody camped out at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
We're based in Atlanta, so it was like in the Georgia State Fairgrounds or something. And, you know, it was a blast, and we were there we were at a track. So the walking was just around a track and the jogging. But it was the camaraderie, and everybody was there for a reason. There were survivors, and there were volunteers, and mm-hmm. there were supporters in it. What you guys have accomplished and continue to do It's just nothing short of amazing. It must be incredibly rewarding work.
It is. It is. Yeah. To be part of and to know what we're doing is we're saving lives. We're
right.
in the business
yeah,
of saving
absolutely.
Lives. Yeah. Yeah.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, what's the best way for them to find you on the internet?
Cancer.org.
Cancer.org.
And we've recently, in the learning space, we've launched a volunteer learning center. So folks who are interested in volunteering can get some of this information and some of this training that we're offering. And there's a volunteer link, and they can...
right out of the box
on, the
on
website.
Their own. They just choose to advance themselves.
Yep.
That's fantastic. So are we allowed to tell our listeners what you told us before we went on air? Your nickname is Fish,
yep.
right?
Yes.
And do you have like some Twitter coordinates or social media coordinates related to that?
Share you can
that
find
with
me on Twitter at Fish Montgomery.
that is so cool.
Yeah, but I've tried to escape it. I just can't. I thought when
you got to embrace it.
I've just embraced it, you know. So I thought it would end in college. I thought when I left college. I thought when I moved to Texas. Nope, it just keeps coming. In fact, my plenty of people at work have asked me to change my Outlook name because when they search an Outlook by Felicia or Fish, they can't find me, and they have to pause too long to think about what my real
what
name
your real
is.
Real name is right.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. So how do folks reach out if they want to hit you at Twitter or something like that? Is it at Fish something?
Yep. Twitter is at Fish Montgomery.
Okay.
And they can always reach me at the American Cancer Society, first and last name Felicia.Montgomery@cancer.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Okay, we'll be back in a few from the show floor of ASTD ICE 2014.
This has been a special Business Radio X production brought to you by Training Pros, your source for local learning and development experts. Learn more at training-pros.com.